Exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another fabulous episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'll just have to say it again because today's going to be a very, very fabulous one. I can assure ye, I have a very special guest in order to facilitate this. His name is Scott Stevens. Now, those of you who may have noticed in recent times, how an awful lot of earthquakes have been happening under suspicious circumstances, storms as well. You might wonder, who's messing around up there? And my very special guest, Scott Stevens from Weather Wars, is here to elaborate. Welcome, Scott.
It's God. Don't you know that, silly?
Well, people just pretended to be delusions of grandeur.
Exactly. I'm glad to be here this evening.
Oh, that's fantastic. Scott, I'd love it if you could just introduce yourself to myself and the audience, plug your website, do the whole corporate logo sort of display thingy, and then we'll get into talking about how men are trying to play effing God.
Some of them have gotten rather good at it, as a matter of fact. Well, I'm a TV meteorologist. I did that gig for about 20 years, and I got interested in weather as a Boy Scout. It was one of the badges that I chose to complete for my Eagle badge. And that was I think I was 12 and a half at the time. And one of the requirements was to build your weather instruments and then watch the local weatherman and track his forecast and look at his accuracy and just kind of acquaint yourself with the weather. And by the time I completed the first month of doing that, and it was July 1978, I was hooked. I was up every night to catch the 10 o'clock, weathercast. And, that was the little tweak that I needed to really jump into weather. Cause at the time I either wanted to be a pilot or an astronomer, it was something in the skies is what called me. And so from that point on, I began keeping weather logs. And did it all the way through high school. By the time I was finishing the requirements for that Eagle award, I had written to the local weatherman and wanted to essentially report my town's weather conditions to him on an almanac situation. And the scout said, no, that wouldn't demonstrate leadership. I did it anyway. And so I became fast friends with the local weatherman. And because I lived a good distance out of town, there's no grocery stores where I lived. You know, when mom would go into town to doctor's visits or something, she would just drop me off at the TV station. And he was my mentor. And so by the time I went off to college, he taught me all he knew. And I became a very good forecaster. That first semester in college, I was at the top of a freshman-sophomore division in weather forecasting, and by the end of that year, I was second place in the country amongst all of the other universities. And so forecasting weather just was something that came very easily for me. My first job was in school in Topeka, and I quickly moved to the main guy and then found that job not financially rewarding enough with the student loans that I had to pay off, and then took a job up in Omaha, Nebraska, with an agricultural forecasting unit, and from there to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we had some severe weather. And I was at a station that had their own radar, and we got to do some serious tornado and storm chasing, and that was a blast. It was a little manic, but it was fun. Then from there to Albany, New York, where I was the main guy at the CBS affiliate. And then I kind of was missing the mountains at that point in time. It was just too gloomy in New England. I needed sunshine. And so I went back west and did the last 10 years in Idaho. You know, it was probably 1998, and I was forecasting winter storms to come in off the Pacific into the Pacific Northwest state. And the guys in Washington, D.C. were having a heck of a time getting things right. They were just boogering forecast after forecast after forecast. You know, a lot of the weathermen rely on the guidance from the guys in D.C. and from the models that the guys in D.C., you know, share with us. And forecast after forecast was just failing. And so that was kind of the first red flag for me, that there was just something a little strange. And it was also about that time, because I've always been interested in the alternative media stream. I've always been very, very open-minded, that I would occasionally see stories about geoengineering, but more specifically about the chemtrail phenomena. And I would read those, and I'm like, this is a bit strange. And by about the third story I'd come across, I thought, I should be able to get to the bottom of this, you know, with my background. And Vinny, for probably 4 years, the websites that were out there that dealt with chemtrails were all, they were pictures of the trails, but they were all alarmist. There was no motivation other than, oh, my goodness, they're poisoning us, we're all going to die. And that was absurd. That was absolutely absurd. I'm like, if they want to kill people, it'll be a virus and we'll all just not wake up one day. You know, it'll be something that abrupt, not this gradual poisoning of the environment that would take literally decades to have an impact on us.
Either that, or they'd poison us from that as well as every other way simultaneously on a long time frame, so that everybody dies eventually of cancer.
Well, what it seems to do is that you end up with health issues earlier in your lifespan than you would otherwise, because it's just this chronic fatigue of dealing with with these nanoparticles that we're constantly breathing. You know, and I'm here in the San Luis Valley in Southern Colorado. And we've had, today is beautiful, it's gorgeous today, you know, we've got maybe 120-mile visibility. But, you know, for 10 days prior to this, we're breathing smoke from fires in Arizona. And I'm still congested. My lungs are congested from all of those pollutants, you know, and the body just gets fatigued. So it could be something similar. And if we were to, you know, to really analyze what's raining down on us or drifting down on us, I think we kind of get alarmed, because there have been those air samples done, and they're not, it is alarming.
They're very scary indeed. We had people doing water sampling after the rains when chemtrail campaigns had stopped. And on the first rain, after the chemtrails had been dumped, took a sample, something like 1,600 times the normal level of aluminium comes down in the rainwater. It's beyond a joke out there. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, people are talking about weather modeling and global warming and all of this kind of stuff. And I was just wondering, Scott, have you been a contestant on Global Warming's Next Top Model?
I'm the Next Top Model? No, because I probably wouldn't get past the producers. Seriously. Well, you know, global warming was something that I wrestled with, you know, till about 2008. You know, like, what's really going on? Is the weather modification and the aerosol operations and how they impact the high cloud behavior, you know, is that inhibiting or contributing to global warming? And it's funny, because you would think with all of the forecast models, you know, the UK's got them, the US has got them, the Canadians have them, and I'm sure the Russians and Chinese do as well, and maybe it's just that those two nations piggyback on what the Western powers use. But there are only two UK climate models that consider the impact of cirrus clouds in their modeling. And the result was that aircraft contrails, and that's how they labeled them, would increase global warming. So that kind of settled that. And then we had the whole ClimateGate thing blow up just as Copenhagen was happening in December of 9. And then that kind of laid it bare that the entire agenda was about taxation, that they wanted another venue. The IMF and the World Bank needed another revenue source, and it was going to be the carbon tax that all of us would be forced to pay, provided our government signed on to this UN agenda. And that climate gate essentially let the papers out that these climatologists from the U.S., the U.K., essentially from NATO powers, had fudged the data. And it was politically expedient for them to fudge the data to keep the funding coming along. So they're not altruistic.
What I found interesting was how the computer modeling and monitoring was very lackluster as well. For example, in Canada, they had upwards of something like 600 weather monitoring stations, and that got reduced over a short time period to 7.
And
they only left in those in urban areas where they had the urban heat island effect. It went up, up. It's global warming.
Oh my goodness! You know, and that's a whole other vein or thread to this discussion. Is the surface observing stations? Because here in the States there are many hundreds of them. But what was interesting is that in the late 1980s, they began automating them. And what happened is that they took the human quotient out of the mix. Prior to that, at 51, 52, 53 minutes after the hour, a human being went out and surveyed the sky, took the instrument readings, and then came inside, keyed it in, and then sent it off to D.C. And what happened is the promise that these computers would do it without human intervention. What is interesting is that the sensors that they use to look at the clouds, the celiometers, don't see above 12,000 feet.
Can I ask you something? Mm-hmm. By chance, do these new automatic weather modification stations get manufactured by the same people as the electronic voting machines in America?
Oh, goodness sake. What they ended up doing was locating them not in locations which meet the standard installation criteria, which would be on a natural, grassy location or in a location where there's natural vegetation. Now they're just outside buildings with air conditioning vents and an exhaust blowing on them. They're at the edges of runways. They're on city rooftops.
In New Zealand, NIWA, the National Institute for Water and Atmospheric Research, got busted a couple of years back taking climate data from a weather station that was right next to an air conditioning duct that was blowing hot air onto it.
Exactly. And there's a website, and I believe it's the Surface Station Project. And what they've had people do, volunteers, is to go out across the country and photograph all of these installations and essentially do a site survey. What they have found, of 80% of all of the sites that are thus surveyed, have a warm bias of at least 2.5 degrees Celsius. And so how much global warming are they telling us is supposed to happen to bring the oceans up by 10 meters in the next 100 years? And it's a total less than the error of these stations. And so we've got bad data going into the models continuously. But what I was saying about these stations is that they don't see clouds above 12,000 feet. And where are the chemtrails? Above 12,000 feet.
That's
so
right.
All of that gets lopped off. It's truncated. It's not seen. But when you go to the satellite data and you look at the clouds in relationship to maybe what was in place in the 1970s, the amount of high cloud cover has doubled in relationship to the increase of low clouds. So they're tweaking the high cloud cover. And that's I think they really wanted the planet warming so they could tax us to the tune of, I don't know how many hundreds of billions, if not trillions. You know, when you look at how bankrupt the Western nations are because of the fiat money system, I can see the need for that extra tax revenue to float the system a little bit farther.
Well, it seemed to me that the whole interest rate thing and all of that, we're going to approach a period of hyperinflation that's going to be absolutely insane for everybody. And so they needed a way of collecting revenue from everybody when everybody was absolutely destitute and had no revenue. So they needed a way that they couldn't get out of that affected them in every single way, shape, or form in their daily lives. So that the enslavement would be complete. You know, you'd just be totally a slave. Every time you move, every time you breathe, tax.
Well, and they needed us to feel good about it. They needed us to feel good about the green tax.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
You love a willing taxpayer. They don't make a whole lot of noise. And they didn't get it. They didn't get it.
They make a whole lot of noise to want to be taxed.
Don't they, though?
I've come up with a name. You know how they call us climate deniers, right?
Oh, thank you.
When in actual fact, they're the ones that are denying the data about the climate. I've decided to call them climate cultists because that's precisely what they are. They're just a modern neo-feudalistic, one-world, Gaia-worshipping bunch of cultists.
Well, and it's strange how they've turned that green movement back on itself. You know, and the green movement, it's something that everyone who lives on this planet should be concerned about, you know, because let's just take the automobile. We've got technology. We've got engines that can run on hydrogen/water. It's there, you know, and we don't need to be polluting the atmosphere with this CO2, even though the plants love it. You know, it's fertilizer for the plants. You know, you go to greenhouse grow operations, then they have propane burners in there to jack up the CO2 so the plants grow. You know, but there's all the other particulates from diesel and gasolines that are not healthy for us that don't seem to be a concern to the greenies.
Doody, doody. And I think it's like when you're wearing rose-tinted sunglasses when it comes to the corruption in the government and the corruption of the scientific field. It's perfectly easy to see everything in a marvelous cloak of green and want to exterminate everybody in a fabulous eugenics way. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Scott Stevens, the weatherman, and we'll be right back after the break.
People, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone.
For the climate, this is changing. As it has been changing for the last 4 billion years! On AmericanFreedomRadio.com, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest from Weather Wars. Is it .com? WeatherWars.com? Is that Scott Stevens?
.info. There's another company that had WeatherWars.com, so I got .info.
Oh well, fair enough. I'm sure you've got I'm sure you've got plenty of more info than they do. And you know, I was hoping to later on in the piece. I'm not sure if you'd be okay with this to be joined by another person who's an expert on global warming and chemtrail to turn into a bit of a panel discussion. But in the meantime, it's just you and me because, quite frankly, I wanted to have access and pick your brain a little bit because it's a very rare opportunity where you get the chance to talk to somebody who's actually qualified.
Well, pour a tall one and let's do it.
Yeah, because one thing I really wanted to get nailed down is these effing climate cultists. They always say, oh, well, you know, if you don't believe in climate change, then you're a climate skeptic, or you're not a scientist, or you believe in tobacco science, or you're funded by oil companies, or there's a myriad of different ad hominem BS attacks that they throw out at you.
Yeah.
And Dr. Tim Ball from Canada, he came up with some really good ones. He says, well, if I'm a climate skeptic, then I'm a scientist, because all scientists are skeptics. So throw another one at me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what the general population, I guess, hasn't been educated about is the climate isn't steady. There is no such thing as a steady state in climate systems. The output from the sun varies. the orbit of this planet varies around the sun. We have wobbles in our axis. We have changes in circulations of the oceans. Climate is never the same thing. And if humans can't build a civilization which gives this planet room to breathe, then frankly, we don't deserve it. We don't deserve it. We've got to give her space. You know, with all this flooding along the Mississippi, well, idiots, it's a river. Step back and let it do what it does. You know, and we're going to have tornadoes. We're going to have these issues. And if we can't build buildings strong enough to withstand it, then expect them to be blown away. It's that simple. It's that simple.
Yeah. Well, look at it this way. Weather changes all the time, so therefore, if you want to basically take control of the planet, all you got to do is get people afraid of something that happens all the time.
Exactly.
And then you'll never run out of ammunition to scare the bejesus out of them.
It's the perfect terrorism. Because you can always blame it on God. You know, and with that, then insurance companies will always pay up. Because if it truly were weather wars, and that Joplin tornado from recent past, you know, were an act of war, then insurance companies wouldn't be, by their own policies, responsible and liable for the damages. It's an act of war, and the people are on their own.
Well, it has to be secret, doesn't it?
Because it has to be.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that it has to be defined as an act of nature. For the economy to continue to chug along. You look at Katrina, the damage along the Gulf Coast. You know, that sum totaled, you know, the low $30 billion range. But it was money moving through the system. It added to the gross domestic product of the country. You know, and it's just this, once again, the velocity of money that the Fed needs to have going so the economy can be greased. It's really kind of unfortunate. And the whole reason I got into this is so we could get public oversight. And I really, really would be, that's my goal, is that we get public oversight of these actions.
Well, yeah, and a good way to do that would be giving the public access to the satellites to review the data for themselves in sort of an open source type fashion. And I believe that's one of the best ways of making sure that things don't become controlled or corrupted or manipulated to a larger extent, is to have the involvement of the public at every level of scrutiny. But what's happening here with global warming and chemtrails and all of that, we're being kept so completely in the dark. And instantly that makes me suspicious that there's some kind of agenda at play here. And the whole idea of taxes to get money and all of that kind of stuff, it doesn't fly with me. I think that they've got all the money they need because they can just create it out of thin air with fiat currency.
Agreed.
I think that in fact what they're really trying to do is they're trying to institute basically the power to tax is the power to destroy. And if you tax carbon dioxide, essentially you're putting a tax on every single human activity, because every human activity, from breathing to house building to animal husbandry, produces CO2. Well, so essentially, they'll be able to create a market mechanism to destroy all human activity.
It could happen. You know, you get a bill every time you urinate. You know, that's where it would go. That's really where it would go.
And someone said to me, Vinny, oh, at least they can't tax the clouds. And I say, not yet.
Yeah, not yet. You know, here in Colorado, we're not capable of rain catchment. You know, you can't catch the water coming off your roof. You know, that's so stupid. It's insane. It's just insane. We should be able to grab that water and use it in zeroscapes and, you know, in beds around the house. You know, I don't know that the law stops people. I'm sure it does stop some, but then there are plenty of others who just turn around and, you know, raise the middle finger and flip them off. It's just, they're just going to do it. They're going to do it. So, I don't know. The climate's going to change. I think that's a given. We're seeing some pretty interesting changes going on in the sun/solar system. You know, when you have massive storms erupting in the northern hemisphere of Saturn, when you've got an increase in atmospheric density, you know, profoundly so in the last 30 years on Mars, you know, when you've got the southern equatorial belt literally disappearing on Jupiter, things are happening in the solar system, and it isn't just confined to Earth. So it's not your automobile. It's not the burning of coal. That's pollution, but it isn't necessarily changing the climate. So we need to look at the bigger scale of what's really going on, and that opens up another whole line of discussion that you won't find on TV. They're just that. Frankly, these people are not evolved enough to follow those lines of thinking. They're just not. They're not. I wonder if the planet, as she changes energetically, that my opinion is that they've captured the planet's weather, and there's very, very few events that don't have the fingerprint of man on them. And then the simple way to diagnose whether man is doing something with it is the presence of chemtrails. If there's chemtrails out there, then they're measuring what they're doing. They're marks in the sky, they're ticks in the sky, and they measure how they drift. They measure how they smear. They measure how they bend and auger and break. Those chemtrails are exceedingly important to their operations, because you have to have some kind of yardstick to figure out what you're doing. If they want to generate another cold rainstorm in the Pacific Northwest, then you have to amp up a high-pressure system across the southeastern states. You have to create that kink in the jet stream. And to do that, they need to have something in the sky marking off. First of all, they have to diagnose what's happening presently. That's called the initialization. And that initialization model goes into a model, and they run the model out for 3 hours, for 6 hours, for 3 days. If they like what's going to happen, they leave it alone. If they don't like what's going to happen, then they apply some solution, whether it's ionization from HARP, whether they're playing with the chi of the atmosphere, which also is an aspect of ionization, or they do it with scalar waves. And so they've got this arsenal of tools that they could use. And if you're going to target southern Wisconsin today with 100-degree heat, then you create a downward or a subsidence effect in the atmosphere. And you have to put these lines in the sky so they can see what the atmosphere is doing, so they can measure it directly. And they're so very good. They're so very good at what they're doing. We are 40 years beyond experimentation and 40 years into implementation. And I don't know how it's going to end, to be honest with you. I don't know. Even if the people figure it out, what's it going to stop them? How is it going to stop? I only think when the financial system breaks down and Boeing doesn't get paid for the jets or Exxon doesn't get paid for the kerosene for the planes, will it stop? It's going to have to take an economic breakdown, and the Federal Reserve is the kingpin. They are the kingpin.
They're trying to force an economic collapse on purpose so they can bring in the new world currency, the Bancor.
But on their time schedule.
Exactly. And you made a point there about how you got to look at the bigger picture. And as a result, you progressed on to going, oh, my God, the problem is so big, how can we even stop it?
Yeah.
And so going in the other direction to looking at the very, very small picture, like let's say the TSA, for example, recently had some legislation beaten back in the House of Representatives in Texas, and as a result, the Fed says, oh, we might make Texas a no-fly zone because they're kicking out the TSA's ability to grope young girls and mothers and whatnot. As a result, the people of Texas are just like really, really angry.
Yes, they should be.
And they're not going to be basically able to get away with it. And that's the thing. Once you get people aware about something that's going on and you get them angry, therefore, it doesn't matter what kind of tyrannical measures you take in place. The media spectacle that comes around revolting people basically can't be ignored. And then they inspire others to get angry. It's like a domino effect, you know. There's plenty of dominoes that are set up against humanity, but I see humanity themselves as a whole bunch of dominoes as well, set up against the enemy, and one affects the other. As soon as one person stands up in a public meeting and says, no, Mr. Barry Satoru, you're a lying scumbag, and I'm not going to listen to you, another person will stand up, and another, and so on and so forth. And my opinion, the only real challenge here, Scott, was getting an alternative media to start telling the truth. That was the real challenge in the first place, and now we've got it. So in my mind, we've already won, and we're just going through the motions here.
Yeah, but there's certainly some truth to that. I had a phone call. It was about 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 days after Joplin, and she was devastated. She was absolutely devastated. You know, she'd been, you know, watching the news, and you know, when you get into that news watching of these disasters as they unfold, you know, there's a victimization of everybody who tunes in. You know, they share the pain of the people of Joplin with the rest of the country, that it literally changes the energetic of the person that is watching. And, you know, we had a discussion about, you know, her husband was in the Marine Corps and he served his time, but, you know, now he has health issues from all the immunizations. But yet she said, I would still die for this country. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? You know, why? Why? What is so great that your life, your precious life, is worth giving up? You know, you go to other places in the world and they're raising different flags, you know, every decade. You know, there's a different flag, there's a different flag. You know, and at some point, we will raise a different flag in this country. And will all of that death for this experiment of democracy have been worth it? And I don't know. You know, I really don't know, and I think that's why our founding fathers set up a republic and not a democracy, was because the people couldn't be trusted to elect the right people. They couldn't be trusted. And I really think that's what happened. What has happened is that the people have elected continuously the wrong people into office because we have no honorable politicians. We don't have statesmen any longer. They're bought off corporate lobbyists who now wear representative and senator badges. You know, it's almost a failed experience with democracy. We're bankrupt. It's time to start new. We need a way out of this, and I'm afraid it's bankruptcy. I just hope we don't do it again. And you know, 50 years after a new flag goes up, you know, that we're going down the same road again. Go ahead.
It would be nice if the U.S. flag wasn't like almost a carbon copy of the East India Trading Company flag.
There is that, isn't there?
Yeah. And it just speaks to me that, basically, the scam's been right there in front of everybody's eyes for hundreds of years. It's just that they haven't been told, you know, they haven't asked that question, hey, do you know what that flag means? Okay, oh, well, what? What do you mean? It's the flag of America. Okay, you see that gold band around the flag?
Yeah.
Well, that's not supposed to be there, okay? When you put a flag up and it has no border, it's a flag of a country. When you put it up and it's got a gold band around it, it means it's a corporation.
Yep.
So that when you've got that flag on your arm and you go off and you kill people, you are literally a mercenary.
Yep. That's what it is, because that's what the royals used to do, is hire the mercenaries. That's what the British did in the revolutionary times, was they hired German mercenaries to come over and fight their war for them. You know, it's just... It's the same game, time and time and time again.
Yeah. And that's the thing. If you don't freaking learn from history, you literally are doomed to repeat it. There is no more preeminent truth that people need to be woken up to. Just shut up. Stop looking at what's happening right now. Just stop for a second and stop worrying about current events and start worrying about past events. Who the players are, where they're linked, what information have you not been told? Ask some frickin' questions for once in your life, because the answers that you don't get...
Leggiadro riso, il bianco il riso.
back. Oh, yes! Welcome back to the Money Game Sports Show.
Oh, my goodness.
You're going to have fun. Because if you don't, you'll get sprayed like a cockroach from the air. Oh, wait, that happens anyway.
I want some of what you have.
Yeah, yeah. It's called ridiculous amounts of coffee.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
By the eighth cup and you're there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's fabulous, freeze-dried poison and all of that kind of stuff. And it's nice because I get to feel like you know the poison and drink it anyway.
And it's good for you. Well, at least in the beginning.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, essentially, I've caught on to something. 90% of all illness is caused by stress, and comedy, laughter, is a good stress reliever.
Indeed.
So if you laugh about all the terrible things that stress you out, you won't get sick.
And follow it up with a little nookie at home, and you're good.
Yeah. What's wrong with a little nookie?
Or a lot.
Or, yeah, nothing wrong with a lot of it either.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And in the second hour here, Scott, we're going to be joined by Claire Swinney from Chemtrails North in New Zealand. And I'm sure that you're well aware that there's chemtrails being sprayed all over the world. So it's a global agenda. It's globally funded. And so, therefore, we've got some central scumbags to look at. And, you know, when I point a finger, the finger, for some reason, goes almost directly to Bill Gates.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, Windows 8?
Yeah, absolutely. I reckon Windows 8 is the thing that controls all the chemtrails. No, I'm joking. Well, basically, here's why. He's got more money than God, conceivably. I think God's probably mortgaged at the moment, which is why all his people are being taken into receivership. But
or he could just manifest from the ether. Who knows?
Yeah. Like the Fed. And what I think is happening is because he's just recently bought Monsanto, and just previous to that, Monsanto just bought Blackwater, and because Monsanto's released aluminium-resistant crops, and because all the chemtrails making the aluminum levels in the soils all around the world absolutely unbearable for plant life, except Monsanto's stuff. Hence, I become a tad suspicious of Bill Gates, considering his father was the head of the American Eugenics Society, later renamed Planned Parenthood.
Oh, goodness. Well, it's interesting that Monsanto decided to go that direction. So somebody clued him in, and it may be that Monsanto and Dow and those chemical companies are the ones responsible for the chemical composition of those powders. And there's certainly various compositions of those trails. I mean, you can look at the trails, you know, cast against the sun, or at least that brighter part of the sky, and you can see the differences in the colors. There's blue ones, there's white ones, there's pink, there's orange, you know, and then there's some that are nearly red.
We had black ones off of my deck a couple of months ago. My girlfriend got up in the morning and she said, "What the F is that?" And then she filmed them, and there's just these black bar chemtrails kind of jagging around like Zeds.
Interesting. And that the black so often, because in the chemtrail community they've called them black beams, I call them shadows, because the trails cast a shadow, because they are truly, you know, opaque, and so they're blocking out that sunshine, and it does cast a shadow. So as long as that wasn't what it was, you know, I'd be interested in seeing those pictures.
Oh, absolutely. I can flick them to you after the show, because let's face facts here. We're under attack in many, many different ways, and bugger if I know if I can figure out all the different ways that I'm under attack. So, you know, you got to go to all of the different experts and ask their opinions about what the F are they spraying on us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the thing. I talked before about the lack of the questioning nature of humanity, and what seems to me prudent is that the education system itself has taught people, conditioned them into not questioning. I remember that if every time I interrupted my teacher to ask a question, clarify or something, they get kind of angry with me, or tell me to put, or to tell me my put my hand down, you know. And particularly if my line of questioning wasn't relevant or appeared to be relevant to the current curriculum. And who writes these curriculums? And why does everybody who winds up coming out of high school go directly into university, get massive amounts of debt, and then when they come out of university educated with a piece of paper that doesn't explain jack about their work ethic, they wind up getting jobs at frickin' Macca's or looking after kids at a daycare centre or something like that when they've got 3 degrees, enough to run a Fortune 500 company?
Okay. Poorly. To run that company poorly.
Well, yeah. But then again, there's not a single Fortune 500 company that isn't run poorly. And
yeah.
But you know, from a moral standpoint, of course.
We're taught what to think. We're not taught how to think. And that's the difference, is that we're not challenged in philosophy. We're not challenged in our beliefs. Our beliefs are laid out to us by our parents and by our church and by our teachers. And they expect us to accept them unquestioningly. And, you know, as we talk about these Indigo kids and now the Crystal kids coming in, they're not buying it. They're not buying it. And you look at this younger generation, the ones that are just becoming young adults now, and they don't fit in this society. They'd much rather escape into their game. And you know, into their little iPads and their little entertainment devices. They don't want to engage society because it doesn't make sense to them. And that's an aspect of probably them not being from Earth. They come from other civilizations, but I think their job tasks have yet to arrive. And when that happens, then they'll have their aha moment, and then they'll be able to step into their own. But right now, they do not want to participate in the crap that is being fed them. And, you know, parenting today is different than their parents. These parents, you know, are kind of rejecting mainstream religion. They're rejecting a lot of what their previous generations or my grandparents had given them. But they're rejecting it because it didn't work for them, and that isn't even getting passed on to these kids. So they're really left adrift.
Yeah, well, they're becoming Luciferian devotee slobs.
Well, they're bored as hell. They're bored as hell with the world. There's nothing out there that excites them except the next iteration of Doom or, you know, whatever game is hot now. You know, there's just nothing out there that engages them. And I just...
They're trying to endlessly distract themselves. And I came up with a point on I think it was a Doc Bean show a while back, is that what people are really doing is they're trying to distract themselves because everything sucks so much.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. You know, the kids aren't given chores. There's not tasks around the house for them to do. They're not being raised. They're just not being raised properly. And so they don't have their moral compass is set. They're just, it's kind of scary because, you know, the CDC had that zombie, you know, attack thing, you know, posted. And who knows, with the change in the Earth's magnetic field, which is now weaker than your personal magnetic field, you know, as these magnetics lift, then memories come off of DNA. Memories come out of the brain. We're left void of knowledge. You're left void of personality, and you just become husks of a person.
This goes back to what I kept saying before, is that if you wanted to have a global government with global control, the way that you had to do that is have a whole bunch of people that live in mixed-up, homogenous stew-type societies with huge amounts of immigration, no religion, no serious or strong religion or anything that can't be manipulated or without bribed pastors or whatever, as is happening in the States, where they preach Romans 13 at the behest of the FBI, which tells people that if the government tells you to do something, follow their orders because they're ordained by God.
Yep,
you know, and this is the thing. They need to steal a generation in order to enslave every subsequent generation. You know what I'm saying?
And I think we're going to have some secrets come out of the Vatican very shortly. I think there'll be a storm around the Catholic Church, as there will be secrets of the past and old knowledge that'll be shared with the public. And then Christianity as a whole will go through some convulsions. And when that happens, it'll be an exciting day because we'll be freed from those beliefs that have been imposed by a verdict of death, you know, by the church for centuries upon centuries. And that's going to free humanity to find, you know, find its own way. You know, if organized religion gets a tax break, you know, they don't have to pay taxes, then what they are preaching is sanctioned by the powers that be. It fits with the agenda. So these churches that are tax-free, that have, you know, have all of these gifts from the state, you know, I would run from. I would absolutely run from. Because they're part of the system.
That's right, that's right. And ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind, the system is not your friend. The system is your enemy. They hate everything about you, and they don't want you to survive a moment longer than you have to. They want to milk every single dollar out of your pockets. They want to make sure that your thoughts do not grow strong and independent to challenge them. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Tune in, stand and be counted. Wounded stations in the belly of the vulture. Watch your back, there's no civilians, women, children. Frontlines, listen, consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Divided, we fall. Fall from the sky from 12,000 feet, like aluminum and barium particles do. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Scott Stevens from weatherwars.info, is still there on the line, I hope.
I am.
All right, that's fantastic, that is. We got into a discussion... over the break about getting on Claire Swinney from Chemtrails North in New Zealand. And the thought came to my mind about Monsanto itself. And, you know, Monsanto is actually a swear word in my house, you know. you'll get the wooden spoon if you...
you mean all your garden plants aren't Roundup ready?
No.
Absolutely. No, nor mine.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's a great idea, ladies and gentlemen, for nice, healthy, you know, digestible food. Get stuff that's resistant to pesticides so that you can spray copious amounts of pesticides all over your food and then eat it.
Yeah. It's insane. It's absolutely insane where we've let the food stream go. It's really incomprehensible that the last 60 years, this is what's happened to the world's food supply. It's insane. Insane. There's so many natural fertilizers that we could use that we would end up with vibrant, healthy plants, largely resistant to insects and molds and fungus. And so you wouldn't even have to have those petrochemicals touch your soils. Because your soils, as you said, were having to get new plants so they could tolerate the increase in the pH of the soils. And Vinny, this is where my other project, Blue Water Alchemy, comes in. We make ormus from the monoatomics found in the oceans that focus the chi, or the life force, in these plants. And they are vibrant. I've got a grower here in town who came back from a 10-day trip, and he called and said, Scott, these plants are freaking monsters. And that's, you know, that's using the natural life force of this planet to grow your garden. Not some potassium, nitrogen, you know, voodoo mix that Monsanto cooks up. We have to use what the planet gave us to grow our foods. And it's so important today. It's so important.
Well, food security is one of the big issues of the day, and I'm not sure if you can speak to this with the weather wars, but there was a lot of suspicion that the big fires last year and big floods in Pakistan, for example, were facilitated because HAARP or Scalar weapons were used to shuffle the jet stream, and as a result, it pushed a whole bunch of really, really crazy weather systems into these areas and totally screwed them up. Have you heard about that? What's your take?
What I would say is that, you know, a 6, 8-hour, 12-hour flood could fall through the cracks, but not something on the scale that Pakistan went through last year or Australia went through earlier this year. Those have to be engineered events because of their duration and magnitude. They're engineered events, period. Then many, many emails came to me from Australia now bemoaning the canopy of chemtrails that were in place prior to the initiation of that flooding experience. And so it was absolutely an engineered event. And if there are chemtrails overhead, they're aware precisely of what's happening underneath them. And in that, literally, that thin sheet of air where those chemtrails have been laid down. You know, it's like a foil layer. And they use that layer to charge the sky. And as it is excited, moisture runs to it, and clouds begin. And then they track the development of those storms. I don't know how many classified satellites have been launched from Vandenberg and from the space and from the shuttle, but there's a constellation of weather observing gear up in space to keep track of what's going on, and each of these chemtrails has its own chemical signature which shines very brightly through these instruments.
I've had a this little chemtrail of mine. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna let it shine.
Exactly.
Oh, and just by the way, Scott, we're now joined for a panel discussion by Claire Swinney of Chemtrails North, former investigative journalist who, in fact, was institutionalized for saying that 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah.
Claire, welcome to the program. As you do. Claire, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Vinny. It's a pleasure to be on the show with you and Scott Stevens.
Glad
to be here.
Go ahead, Claire.
I've been an avid fan of your website, Scott. I think it's fantastic, the photographs that you've got on there and the explanations that you've got of what's going on. Well, I think you've educated a lot of people.
It's a passion. You know, it was a passion and kind of consumed me for a couple of years. And, you know, part of me has kind of stepped back because I kind of think, you know, there's a much greater quotient of people that have figured out that something's not right now. I have this gut feeling that it's going to get really ugly really soon as we reach a mass awakening with what's happened. You know, there's just, I can feel that coming probably before the end of the year. Something ugly is going to happen.
Yeah, and there is a mass awakening happening. I noticed when I did a Google search, this is in mid-September last year, there were just 1,730,000 entries in Google.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did a search today, there were 4,180,000 entries. So that's a massive increase in awareness of the issue. So that's good news.
Yeah.
And hopefully people within the system are learning about what is really happening to their planet and the poisoning that is occurring. And one can only hope there are enough good people that what can be, that hopefully this can be slowed down
Stopped, you know. We can create a Garden of Eden type of experience. You know, that is wholly within the realm of possibility with the technology that's already been, you know, been purchased. You know, we can change this agenda, and it can be done very, very quickly. But again, like you said, it takes the mass awareness. Those people have got to come up and, you know, kind of demand an accountability from their elected officials to what the heck is going on? You know, what is this?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I was quite worried to see a Defense Weather Systems logo. It's a pyramid, and inside the pyramid there's a big a black circle, and it says Worldwide Weather for the Warfighter. And underneath at the bottom of the logo, it says Defense Weather Systems Directorate. And inside this black circle is a picture of the planet. And it's covered with cloud material. And there's a phoenix rising, which is kind of, it's very symbolic, isn't it?
It sounds like something David Dees would concoct up in his little studio. You know what I'm saying? This is the funny thing. You know, you can make fun of these people and come up with all these crazy, hilarious pictures about how psycho and occultic and nuts they all are and whatever, and it will never be as crazy as it actually is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's the truth. Truth is always stranger than fiction.
What I find interesting is that the people who are in charge of society, or even their puppets to that kind of thing, are so far away from the truth that it's almost like every word that they say, every sentence, every punctuation mark is a lie.
It's comical.
Barack H. O. Barry Satoru could tell me, you know, the weather's nice today, and I'd have to stick my head out the window to check.
So, you know, I always kind of hoped that New Zealand was one of those locations that was spared. But apparently that isn't the case from your observations.
No. Well, we haven't been spared. If anything, we've been speared. You know?
Well, Christchurch certainly has.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of suspicious activity around the Christchurch. So it was something like 40 eyewitnesses recorded massive sonic booms coming out of the sky before the earthquake.
Yep.
People seeing rainbow clouds, people seeing meteors. And, you know, these are all telltale signs of HAARP and scalar technology being used.
Absolutely.
There was an emergency drill being conducted on the day where 1,000 New Zealand troops were in town. Preparing for a disaster. How often does that happen with disasters? Quite often, actually. And there were also, incidentally, 9 U.S. nine U.S. congressmen, as well as the head of FEMA, and as well as supposed to be the head of Homeland Security were there on that day as well. And they jumped on a plane and got the F out of there exactly 2 hours before. Boom!
Oh, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
And guess what they were all here discussing?
Earthquake.
Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. That's right. The Pacific Rim version of NAFTA and GATT.
Oh, my goodness. It's disappointing, but it shouldn't be.
You know, I'm always shocked but never surprised. You know, they've become my favorite phrase other than, oh, what a tangled web we weave. Because, you know, there's too much.
Were there sightings of spheres or like UFO-like disks around Christchurch at that time?
Well, there weren't any things of spheres per se, but there were strange lights dancing in the sky in the night after the quake, and there was also sightings of meteors that broke the sound barrier. And anybody knows anything about meteors, meteors can't break the sound barrier because when they come into the atmosphere, it's around 22,000 miles an hour, and in order to break the sound barrier and produce a sonic boom, you have to be going from about 700 miles an hour and then cross the sound barrier to 750 or 800 miles an hour in order to produce a sonic boom. So these weren't meteorites, but apparently what happens is sections of the sky set on fire and they start traveling because of this HAARP technology. I'm not sure what it was.
Well, as the hurricanes in 2004 came into Florida, there are many red spheres that people on that Florida peninsula witnessed.
They were the same color that was seen above Christchurch.
Could have been. Now, Lieutenant Colonel Bearden's work on Russian scalar weaponry, talks about these spheres being what he calls registration devices. And it's essentially a GPS locator as to the proper place to dump the energy or extract the energy out of, much like you have a rifle with a laser sight on it. And then that laser sight points the red beam on the target. And then we have activation. And then and as that boom arrives or that distortion in space-time arrives, then we end up with the quake as the gravity field on one side of the fault line is disturbed. That equilibrium is lost, and then you have the vault. You have the movement of one side of the fault. So that's interesting. I'd love to see videos and read some of those eyewitness accounts, because you know when that quake happened, and there are specific depths at which these quakes occur, which tend to be man-made. The first depth is a very shallow earthquake, and that's a 5.0-kilometer quake. I mean, it is exactly 5.0. And then there's 10 kilometers down, 10.0, the next one being 35 kilometers. Quakes outside of those three levels tend to be more often than not natural, and in fact probably 98% of the time tend to be natural. But quakes of those three depths, I was advised that those should be viewed as highly suspicious events. And I don't recall what depth the Christchurch quake was. I think it was a five kilometer.
Yeah, no? It was a 5 kilometer.
Yeah, very shallow. Very shallow. And so a lot of that undulation and that liquefaction happens very close to the surface as that energy is dissipated. So
Yeah. I mean, the liquefaction of it was quite extreme because, of course, nobody in Christchurch ever has read a Bible, and so they managed to build an entire city on sand.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. And with freestanding masonry buildings.
You know, well, apparently, but not all is lost. Apparently, the Rolling Stones are going to come down there and hold a benefit concert called I Can't Get No Liquefaction.
You're bad. You're so bad.
No, I got much worse than that. That they also had to close their big stadium, the AMI stadium, because there's too much liquefaction and the cracks running through it. You know, the whole thing is just too dangerous. So they had to call off the games of the Rugby World Cup in lieu of the having the Squash World Cup. So that was just fine.
Oh, goodness. You guys.
That's rough. You know, I need to go back to Christchurch to see my flatmate. But anyway,
yeah, no, I just had it dead for a moment. So,
yeah. Well,
couldn't be the distance involved.
Let's hope it's just a chemtrail interference,
or a friend beeping in. Who knows?
Well, in fact, there's another thing. Did you hear that Harp had the ability to make you hear voices in your head and stuff?
No, but I understood that they could use it as a very precise ground-penetrating radar.
Mm. Well, it's a multifunction kind of thing. It's like the pocket multi-tool of weather warfare is HARP, and you can use it as over-the-ground radar, over-the-horizon radar.
Yeah.
You can use it as ground-penetrating radar.
Yeah.
You can use it to move cloud formations. You can use it to cause earthquakes. And another thing is that you know how your brain broadcasts on a frequency, sort of like a certain number of hertz. Well, they can actually send out a signal and play a music track through harp or whatever, play something, and they can tune the harp instrument to the exact same frequency that your brain broadcasts its thoughts on, so it sounds like it's coming from inside your head.
Is that crazy?
Yeah, that's crazy, man. And even Governor Jesse Ventura found that out when he did a episode conspiracy theory about the HARP technology. And the guy had a little handheld portable device that he puts a little pad on his neck, and he heard it from inside his head.
Wow.
You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My two very special guests are Claire Swinney from Chemtrails North New Zealand and Scott Stevens from weatherwars.info. We'll be right back.
Yeah, yeah, and no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo. But I'm here now. So what you wanna do? How many dudes you really know? And flow like this, like this, like this. Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, infinity, not many, infinity. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about crusading. That's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. It's Vinnie with a Y. It's the most important question, apparently. I have two very special guests on the line today, ladies and gentlemen. Claire Swinney from Chemtrails North, New Zealand, and Scott Stevens from WeatherWars.info. And we were talking about the Christchurch quake and how everything's, you know, just basically getting completely destroyed by design, of course. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of theories. And one thing I wanted to bring up was, I think it was Jeff Rentz. He said on a show after the Japan quake, he said, if one more person comes up talking about HAARP, I'm gonna throw up. and it's just like, well, bro, there is a kind of element to that, you know? Almost every single weather event or whatever, it's almost like the conspiracy theorists have become the new climate cultists of the thing, you know? It's just like if you see something, say something.
I get that, though. There's a fatigue with it. Because, you know, once they began weather engineering, was there ever a decision or an end date, or was it just something that it was going to be continuous from that point forward? And what I look at, when I look at satellite imagery, the geometric shapes that are manifest because of this engineering are global. There's no place that is unimpacted by this. You know, take the example of an Olympic-sized swimming pool. It's a closed system, much like the sphere of the Earth is largely a closed system. There is still some access from space, and that's another topic. But, you know, even a small child playing in the corner of this pool is going to impact the entirety of the pool with its waves. No corner of this pool will not feel those waves. That's another reason why they need the chemtrails. So they can watch how the atmosphere evolves. They've got to have them. And so I honestly don't see an end to this. And we talked about this in the first hour. Until the financial system breaks, maybe then there's a chance. Maybe then there's a chance. What I'd like to ask Claire is, what, you know, if you were in New Zealand, what did you see in the sky that made you go, aha, there's something different going on up there?
It was January the 2nd last year. Luckily, I had a friend who was sitting at the back of the house, and he was playing the guitar, staring up at the sky at the time. Otherwise, I'd been on the wiser. And he saw a plane flying past and left the trail, and he rushed into me, and he said, get your camera. I've just seen a plane spraying a chemtrail. And we watched this trail and photographed it in its progression over about 45 minutes, and I was very alarmed after about 25 minutes when it was over the house. I could see chemicals literally falling off it in front of the house. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this is some kind of weapon. And we went out to get away from it. And but in spite of that, a few hours later, I developed very swollen lymph nodes.
Wow.
And, yeah, they would... They've never been swollen, Scott, and they remained so for about 14 days. And I thought, well, it was almost as if my body was trying to fight off something that it hadn't encountered before. And then after the lymph nodes subsided, I developed a fungal infection on my foot that I haven't had before. And it's still with me now. So that's what woke me up to it, and it made me realize what a threat they are.
Yeah.
And since then I've been taking photographs and I've been observing the amount of aerosol of material that they're putting over. This is Northland, New Zealand, and it was a pristine area, and
as it should be. I mean, you're isolated. It's a beautiful, beautiful place on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made me burst out in tears on a number of occasions when I saw them filling the sky up, because I knew what it meant. Having seen, luckily I saw Clifford Carnacom's aerosol crimes a few years before, and so it was easy to expect, you know, a drought, and we did get a very severe drought early last year. It was the worst drought this region has had in decades. And so with the filling of the sky with the aerosol material came, you know, the drought, and then there was another drought later on in the year. It was very, very unusual. And the sky, I'm looking at it now, it's absolutely loaded with aerosol material. It's really quite horrifying what they're doing. And it's been very, very cloudy since Easter. There's been very little sunlight, and I strongly suspect that they are trying to impact on people's vitamin D levels suppress people's immune systems.
You know, and I think one of the larger agendas, you know, aside from weather modification, is the mood engineering of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people on a sunny, gorgeous day, their spirits are much higher than on a cloudy, dreary, windy day. And when you can engineer those kind of moods, because the more I've dug into the power structure of this planet, the farther down the top of the human political structure becomes. You know, we are subservient to other races, and that's the only way to explain what's going on, is that it there are powers greater than the presidency. There are powers greater than the World Banks. These are just apparatuses used by another much darker energy.
I think the owning the weather by 2025, that U.S. Air Force document, you can see in that when you do a search using the word health in that document, and environment, and look how the word environment is used. There's no regard for our health mentioned there, no regard for the environment. And so it is as if these people are not of this earth. They've got no regard.
You know, as we come up on 2012, which, you know, in many cultures signifies, you know, a rebirth, and it's almost as if that humanity has a judgment day coming. And there will be a power, a council, something that will ask humanity, how have you shepherded this planet? Do you deserve sovereignty? Have you earned the right of sovereignty over your planet? And if you look at what has happened over the last several hundred years, you know, how Europeans treated the indigenous peoples of the Americas, how we have treated the oceans, the Gulf of Mexico and the Pacific in recent example, you know, the answer is no. And if this darker overseeing force that has been on this planet for many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, does not want humanity to graduate into its own sovereignship and then be able to dictate who arrives and who resides on this planet. And so I think there is that aspect of this that is not much talked about, because exopolitics is not yet a cool topic on the shows. Mm-hmm. But I think that is supremely important to discuss is exopolitics and where humanity, you know, and how much say do we really have, and what happens? Because if we lose the right to earn our sovereignty coming up very, very soon, then that means a whole other long cycle with overlords, if you will. And I don't want to be here then. You know, send me someplace else. Send me someplace else. So
this comes to a point that I like to try and make for people, particularly Americans, is that it's called a New World Order for a reason, because they're doing it everywhere in the world and there literally is no escape. There is nowhere else.
and that doesn't have to be a bad thing if it's done with honor, with the intent for the betterment of humanity. Then it's not a bad thing. But if it's about exercising, control over the people through a priesthood or a government, then it's not good at all. And we have to discern what kind of a new world order we want, because I promise you, Vinny, one is coming. one is coming.
I would think that any new world order that would be of beneficial humanity is simply destroying the old world order, and that would basically set us a great template for creating a society that isn't run by criminal bankers, Satanist occult worshipping scum, and eugenicists.
Yep, and I think that that catastrophe that will precipitate a new world order is not far away. And whether it is generated by a pulse from the sun, a pulse from the center of the galaxy, or if it's done from a harp-like technologies, it's coming.
And yeah, it's like we're saying, they're always trying to stage crises in order to get us under their wings, aren't they? And it seems to me, in fact, a friend of mine said to me, hey, Vinny, you know, my entire street is coming down sick with the flu or something. Do you think it might be some kind of an engineered virus? And I asked them, has it been hyped up in the media? And they go, no. And I say, well, then it's not a government-engineered virus. You're just getting sick.
Yep, exactly.
And for example, if you have a look at Europe right now, and this is something that they're doing all the time now, is releasing these bioweapons in order to scare the population into taking vaccines and whatnot. There's this new freaking, what was it, Salmonella, E. coli? And it's like, oh, well, let's blame it on Spanish cucumbers. Oh, well, I'm sorry, we actually tested the virus, and it turns out that it's had virtually every antibiotic known to man already tested on it in its own genetic code. So that means that it could not be anything other than a government-made bioweapon.
Yep. And of course, it shows up on an organic farm, because Monsanto didn't provide them the seeds for the planting. They're heritage seeds, and so it's tarring and it's tainting what is good for you to drive you back to the processed foods that are packaged by Big Agra. It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. So
yeah, Big Agra makes me big and aggro.
It makes what?
It makes me big and aggro. Aggro meaning aggressive. And upset. You see what the little thing is there? Never mind. Well, you know, it just seems to me that, of course, our governments are totally controlled. Let's just accept what we know. Our governments are totally controlled puppets of the international crime syndicate known as the New World Order. Okay, that's basically it. So therefore, if we're going to have any solutions to any of these type of people, the solution does not lie in the ballot box. It lies in the people on the street. People like yourself, Scott, like yourself, Claire, the people who are actually exposing what's going on. Those are, in my opinion, the people who are the new leaders of society, or rather the leaders of society into a more informed age, so that the scumbags and puppets who rule by manipulation and deception will be exposed and countered at every single turn. That's what I think is basically it. I mean, we don't need to necessarily go on the offensive, but we need to basically develop a proper defense mechanism. And I call this the tactic of the cactus, because in every country, for every single New World Order agenda, there is already existing a patriot there who, for whom this issue is their speciality. Those people are essentially the spine on the cactus of that particular region. Wherever the New World Order strikes, there is already somebody there willing to defend it.
Yep.
And what I believe is necessary nowadays is to link up all of these defenders of humanity and just allow them to operate completely independent, kind of like terrorist cells. Don't want to use that. I don't want to demonize anybody here, but that's basically what it is. I mean, they've defined terrorism as anybody who doesn't agree with terrorism.
Absolutely. You know, there's one book that I came across about 8 years ago that had the clearest, most detailed explanation about the situation that humanity finds itself in. And that book was by George Green, and it's called The Handbook for the New Paradigm. And there's the better part of, I guess, somewhere of about 80 chapters. And these were messages from higher evolved beings that were not necessarily channeled, but it was information brought down, and it's very clear on how we go about breaking their hold on us, and that there are so many other civilizations out there watching Earth at this point, watching humanity at this point, and if we but only would ask, they could help. They could help, but karmically and with the laws of free will in the universe, we have to be allowed to play out this experience. It's our choice. Until we make a different choice. And as long as we keep voting our power away, then that's the system our energy is going into. That's the system we are reinforcing. Every vote is, you know, you're pissing away your power. You're pissing away your right to govern yourself via your own personal responsibility. And that is the keynote of the new paradigm, is your personal responsibility. Every law that any legislature passes, you know, is a failure of society to do the right thing. Because if society did the right thing, you wouldn't need laws. You just wouldn't need them. Now, if you look at the United States Code and all the laws, I don't know how many rooms it could fill up. And if there is ever a greater testament of the failure of society, it's the code, it's the laws of the United States that bear testament to that failure.
That's right. The United States put the awful in lawful. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Scott Stevens from weatherwars.info and Claire Swinney, a contributor to guerrillamedia.co.nz at chemtrailsnorth.wordpress.com. And we'll be right back after the break.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back. I said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show that's all about history repeating and never learning anything and winding up, you know, living in a fabulous slave eugenics-controlled society. I love being a slave. It's just so fun because it's so many entertainment. It's because there's so many entertainments.
just let me work in the palace if I'm going to be a slave.
Yeah, absolutely. Better to be at the right hand of the devil than in his path. Or in the path of an oncoming jet airliner, as the case may be. And my very special guest was the final segment here, ladies and gentlemen. I know, it's depressing. I know you wish we had an extra hour a day in the show, but unfortunately, all good things must come to an end. But let's try to end it on a constructive note. And I know that that's very difficult in the conspiracy theory movement because, quite frankly, destruction is our bread and butter. Now, talking about legislation against chemtrails, and Claire, you might be able to fill us in on this. There was Dennis Kucinich's, what was this, a Space Air Preservation Act or something along those lines?
You'll have to ask Scott about that, I'm afraid. But, yeah, at the moment there's no regulation of geoengineering and the door is open for anyone to go up there in a plane and dump whatever they want to. And that's horrendous when you've got people of the likes of Bill Gates who fund engineering and you know that they're committed to drastically reducing the world population in the name of hoaxes like man-made global warming. So, perhaps Scott would like to.
Well, and Dennis Kucinich's work was in that piece of legislation, but that was, if I'm not mistaken, 2001/2002. So if that legislation, you know, wasn't picked up in that cycle of Congress, then you know it was kind of thrown off to the side, and even chemtrails did not make it out of committee. That word was just way too hot. So it didn't make it out of committee. And, you know, when you have, you know, I'm 100 miles from Denver, 200 miles from Albuquerque, and I have low-flying 737s, 757s constantly. I can literally step out the front door, and more often than not, inside of 1 minute, I'll hear a low-flying plane. They're not always leaving a trail, but you can, you know, watch them as they cross the sky, and then the trail sputters, and then it's on. And so,
when you, Scott, sorry,
yes.
When you say low flying, are you seeing them at about 4,000 feet sometimes?
No. For these commercial craft, it's under 20,000 feet. More often than not, I would guess somewhere around 18,000 feet, because my house right now is 8,000 feet above sea level. So I'm already up almost a mile and a half into the sky. But these planes are just level. They're a level flight, and they're just cruising. So there's something energetically happening, you know, in this part of the state, in the Four Corners region, southern Colorado, northern New Mexico, that they're surveying, that they're constant. And this is where I began to think that some of the work that they're doing is with ionization devices on board the aircraft. And those ionization devices would stimulate the chi, or the organ energy, of the atmosphere. And if you want to dig into the work of Wilhelm Reich, or more recently, James Trevor Constable, and his
way. He was a New Zealander constable, wasn't he?
Yeah, in New Zealand. And he was a radio officer for the SS Maui, which was a container freight ship that cruised frequently between Los Angeles and Maui. And on board that ship, the captain and the freight line allowed him to build these cloud-busting devices. And since the ship had radar, he could see exactly what they were doing. And it didn't take but 10, 15 minutes in a marine environment to turn over the clouds and get it to rain. And he has great, great experience and fantastic documentation about how cheap it is to disperse smoke and smog, how cheap it is to generate rainfall. And I really think, and this is why I'm kind of glad I didn't get my documentary done in 2008, that this is where most of the U.S. government has invested their energies in manipulating the weather, is dealing with the organ of the chi force. And then the Russians are using these scalar waves to tear apart those storms and to create drought. So we have one government using one methodology, the organ of the chi by the Americans, and then the Russians and the Japanese and those others using the scalar apparatuses. And so we have this back and forth battle between the two technologies. And then we can tune the chemical makeup of the chemtrails to fluoresce when you have a high chi environment, and then to literally not sustain itself when you're in a low chi environment. And then you can have some tune to reveal where we have locations of higher moisture content. But the chemtrails are all about igniting or lighting up these locations where we have these variations of chi and moisture in the atmosphere, and ionization as well. Because once something is ionized, negatively ionized, the moisture is just going to rush to it. I mean, it can't help itself. It's going to go there. So, you know, someday, I hope I'm able to be ushered into the control room and to see what's going on and to see how they do it. You know, I want that understanding, you know, just for my own sanity. But what I'd really like is some of these air traffic control guys to speak up and speak out, because they hold some keys. They see these fleets of planes. They see the traffic, and they're going to be sweet whistleblowers when that particular time comes. Is these ATC, these air traffic control guys, because they've got it. They've got it.
Well, yeah, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is that if you emphasize personal responsibility, all the big problems and everything just sort of wind up falling by the wayside.
Exactly.
Because they can't be carried out. If every pilot who knows that they're dumping chemtrails, and I doubt that there's a single pilot that's dumping chemtrails today that doesn't at least be a little bit suspicious about why they're told to flip a switch and produce these massive chemical dumpings over large population areas or rural areas or whatever the hell, you know, if they all took some personal effing responsibility,
yep,
and said, hey, you know what, sorry, I'm not going to participate in this eugenics operation, sir, thank you very much, I'm just going to continue to fly this plane, and I'm not going to dump it. Sorry.
And Vinny, I'm not convinced that there are necessarily even pilots on these aircraft that are dedicated to the program. They can all be flying remotely. There's no need for pilots. There's no need.
That's true.
And so it's all automated. And when you look at the main marking chemtrail, like you saw in the beginning, that convinced you that it was happening, watch how those trails deform. there's tears, there's spreads, there's gaps, there's something. There's a reason why they flew that trail at that altitude and on that direction. And what more often than not happens is that there will be a second, a third, or a fourth plane that will go off and mark those demarcations or mark those deformations in those trails. And it's either the trail augering, the trail disappearing, the trail being literally lifted in a rising atmosphere or descending in a subsidence environment. It's all about the meteorology of it. And time-lapse photography is a godsend into deciphering what they're doing. That's the only way I figured it out. So, because on the website, I've got, and this is all over the web, enemytanker.com, I think, put it up, a commercial pilot plane was following another jet. He was up the next flight level by about 2,000 feet and not too far, maybe 2 miles behind him. And you could see this DC-10 spray on, spray off, spray on, spray off. And the spray was coming off the leading edge of the wings, so it was a full wingspan spray. And it was undeniable, absolutely undeniable that there was something going on there.
And those sprayers could be being controlled by a satellite, couldn't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so the pilots could be completely oblivious.
And I think that the airlines may know that they've got a flight from Atlanta to Chicago, and there's this pallet, this freight pallet that shows up that, you know, weighs 15,000 pounds, but the airline has been notified ahead of time. This pallet goes into the freight bay, it's plugged in, and then by the time they land in Chicago, the thing weighs 8,000 pounds less. You know, but since they're planning these weather events, they know when to get gear in place ahead of time. It's an incredible orchestration. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
Make sure that everybody's got plausible deniability, so that if they wanted to take responsibility, they can't.
Bingo.
Because they'll go up to the air traffic controller and go, "Oi, they've got like 15,000 pounds of chemtrail crap that they're putting onto my plane. Take it off, please."
Yeah.
The traffic controller says, "Sorry, we can't. No can do. You are cleared for launch. Go, or you're fired."
that's definitely plausible, because I really don't think the pilots are aware of what's going on, and because most of the chemtrail fleet is flying under 30,000 feet, they're below the commercial traffic, and so they're not necessarily intermixed.
Oh, what a tangled trail we leave.
Yes, we do.
Listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, my very special guests have been Claire Swinney from Chemtrails North New Zealand. You can visit her website if you go to gorillamedia.co.nz, and down on the right, click on the Chemtrails North New Zealand button. And also Scott Stevens from weatherwars.com. .info. I'd like to thank both of you. Extremely large quantities
of
thanks.
Thank you very much.
I just want to dump shiny thanks all over you from the sky. And we'll be back tomorrow, folks, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.